This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There is no rivalry like Backstreet Boys versus NSYNC, but if we narrow it to football, there are some good rivalries that maybe can compete. There is this one guy on our Facebook page that I believe has posted 15 different rivalries. And a lot of them involve the same teams, which is kind of funny. Oh, heavens. I can only delete so many posts before I can't even manage anymore. The Facebook page wears me out. But I do like some of your posts about Army and Navy. Vincent says he went to Army-Navy in Baltimore about 20 years ago. By far, one of the most amazing events that I have ever been to. It's definitely on my bucket list. I absolutely would love to see one in person. So I imagine it's even more amazing than it is on TV, which does always give me chills. So Army-Navy, 120th version of this rivalry, comes up in Philadelphia, Lincoln Financial Field, on Saturday. You've got two teams that are all about the Ravens' ball control. Just kidding. I think the Ravens are jealous. 361 rushing yards per game for Navy, 312 rushing yards per game for Army. So somebody, something's got to give, because there's not enough minutes in the game for them both to be able to rack up that kind of real estate on the ground. Going to be a lot of fun to watch, and it got me thinking about football rivalries. Now, this one's in a category of its own. It matters so much more than the final score, though, of course, that matters to them. Army has won three straight, is looking for a fourth consecutive win, but Navy owned the rivalry going back to the decade plus before that. From 2002 to 2015, Navy had quite a win streak going. So, yes, it's bragging rights, but it's also the recognition of what happens after this game and where the seniors are going and how they're going to be deployed and stationed all over the country and all over the world. And of course, the sacrifices that they make and the service they've signed up for. That's the overarching piece of this that doesn't exist in any other football rivalry. And so I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm glad that it's the last game of the college football regular season before we launch forward into bowls, because I believe it deserves a stage all to itself. 855-212-4227. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. Get yours with Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. We heard from Roger Goodell a little bit earlier on some of the details about the investigation into the Patriots filming. Well, not the Patriots, but an independent crew of videographers taping the Bengals sidelines during their game against the Browns. They were contracted by the Patriots. Was this a form of cheating? Did they tell this crew to film the rear ends of the Cincinnati Bengals on their sidelines? Or were they, as Bill Belichick says, completely oblivious, and the videographer crews didn't even know that they weren't supposed to? Now, that seems a little far-fetched to me. I feel like this is pretty common knowledge. You don't go into someone else's stadium and videotape their sidelines, especially if you've been living in the space in which we exist over the past, 15 years with the Patriots. How do you not know about Spygate and understand what that was all about? So regardless, the NFL is doing its due diligence, and Roger Goodell's talking about it. Essentially, they don't have a whole lot of information now. They're still in that process where they're gathering information. It's much farther along when it comes to the Houston Astros, investigations abounding. Rob Manfred giving an update on Wednesday about how extensive their investigation has gotten. Have you heard these numbers? These are even more overwhelming than the number of dollars in Garrett Cole's contract. 60 witnesses interviewed by Major League Baseball already. 76,000 emails. Oh, could you imagine being signed to that job? That was your job? Blech. And then Manfred points to a trove. He calls it a trove, like a treasure trove of instant messages. And after doing that review, now they have to do some follow-up interviews. This is all according to the commissioner. But he doesn't have any final diagnosis yet, final prognosis. And he even says, I can't speculate about what the discipline might be. And he doesn't even indicate that he's confident or that the investigation is pointing them in a particular direction, that he's confident of a particular outcome, just that it's taken them a lot deeper than what they thought originally. And this is not that distant past, which I also think is fascinating, because you're talking about interviewing players and coaches that are now in other places in Major League Baseball. Mike Fiers being, of course, the whistleblower in this case. But how about Carlos Beltran? He's now the manager of the Mets. Wouldn't Alex Cora have known what was going on? He's the manager of the Red Sox. He was the bench coach for the Astros when they were in the World Series in 2017. So there's a lot of people that have to be interviewed, and now they're kind of spread out around Major League Baseball, of course, and then you've got the people who are still in Houston. But yeah, weird. Carlos Beltran just got his first managerial job and now has to talk about whether or not his former team that he was part of when they won a World Series was cheating at the time. Those investigations are ongoing, period, end of sentence. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. What's the best rivalry in football? We're going football specific here. And also on our Facebook page, you're blowing it up there, which is always fun. The latest news to come out of the baseball winter meetings in San Diego, Anthony Rendon gets the same deal as his former teammate Steven Strasburg, 7 years, $245 million. It includes a full no-trade clause as well as no opt-out. It's coming off his first All-Star bid. He didn't play in the game, if I remember correctly, but his first All-Star bid, 126 runs batted in to lead the majors. He had a career high in batting average. He had 34 home runs, which was also a career best. He homered in both Game 6 and 7 of the World Series. His batting average even higher in the playoffs. He had 15 RBI in the 17 games. I mean, he was an MVP candidate. And you remember the Nationals offered him a 7-year deal, same length of contract, but undersold, apparently. $210 to $215 million was what they offered him. So they wanted to make him a $30 million a man, $30 million a year man. But that wasn't enough. Scott Boras got him $35 million annually with the Angels. Think about this. The Angels, who have made the playoffs one time in Mike Trout's tenure, he's got more MVPs than they have playoff appearances since he got there. They now have the two highest paid hitters in baseball in terms of average annual value. So the most expensive hitters when you're looking at salaries. Mike Trout makes $35.5 million per year. Anthony Rendon makes $35 million. And of course, those are the second and third highest salaries in baseball behind Gerrit Cole. Wowzers. So I'm sure we'll get some reaction from the Angels, and kind of neat that Joe Maddon is now the new manager there. I'd kind of forgotten that piece earlier when I was talking about it, but they believe they have a manager who can take the franchise to the next level, or back to the level it was when they won their World Series. And oh gosh, don't tell me, was it 02? Sometimes the years all blend together. But when they won their World Series with Mike Socia, it's been a while now. And those playoff appearances for the Angels have been hard to come by. Now, part of that is the division they play in. Oakland and Houston have both had multiple playoff appearances. In the case of the Astros, they've been to the World Series twice. So the division itself is a major hurdle. But with the money they're paying Mike Trout over the next forevers, they can't afford to not be competitive. Plus, they bring in Joe Maddon. They're paying him. They wanted Gerrit Cole. Once they didn't get Cole, Rendon became their top priority. Are they now a World Series contender? That part remains to be seen. The Toronto Raptors did a mini celebration last night in honor of Kawhi Leonard returning to Toronto with the Clippers. And it was kind of cool. He had his ring presentation on court, courtesy of Kyle Lowry.
We just laughed at it. We knew, I knew he was going to present me the ring before the game. And, you know, just probably memories ran through our head and we just laughed.
What the Raptors did overall, like the video, the players coming out, all of them who played with him, that's the best that I've seen since I've been in the league. So, I mean, that's a really classy move by the organization and then by the fans as well.
High praise from Doc Rivers, head coach of the Clippers, and they beat the Raptors 112-92. And Kawhi got a thunderous ovation, as you can imagine, standing ovation. The fans were happy to see him back. Not as happy as they would be if he was there all the time. But still, I'm glad that they chose the classy road. I'm glad that they remembered that if not for Kawhi Leonard, they would still be without an NBA title. Kawhi had 23 points, 6 assists. But I'm sure it's a little bit odd for the fans in the arena, but also for his former teammates. Even if it was only a year, you kind of get used to having people around.
I think everybody knew that he was going to get a warm reception tonight, right, and deservedly so. You know, I thought we were doing a pretty good job on him. You know, we decided to go straight up in the second half, and he shook free a little bit more. But I still thought we, you know, he's 8 of 14. You know, not a big deal. 23 points, I think you're probably going to live with.
As far as winning a championship, you know, it pretty much comes a full circle now. Being able to get the ring and, you know, see where the hard work and stuff came from. But it's more than that. It's just a journey.
So Kawhi had really positive things to say about the championship, of course, about playing in Toronto. And he has. I mean, he's been extremely complimentary of how the city treated him, how the fans treated him, how he felt welcomed, and how much he enjoyed his experience there. For him, it was the confirmation that, in fact, he could still play basketball at the highest level after the injury the year before. Remember, he only played 9 games and what was a painful, bitter exit from San Antonio, despite the fact the Spurs tried so hard to keep him. There was one snippet of his post-game conversation, though, that I didn't quite understand. And we cut it, but because I wanted to play it, but I don't really get it. Maybe, and I asked Chris, and he doesn't get it either. So I don't think this is like millennial speak. He was talking about the championship ring.
I have my, I have a logo in there. It's on my middle finger, so it reminds me to put it on my middle finger. So I have a like a FU symbol on there.
Wait, is he being literal? On the inside of his ring, he has a middle finger pointed up to remind him to wear it on his middle finger. I mean, I've never won a championship ring. Do you think that's necessary to have an FU symbol in your ring so that you know to wear it on your middle finger? Or do you just, you put it on your pointer finger, it doesn't fit, and you're like, oh, yeah, it goes on my middle finger. Is that a millennial thing, Chris? Do you have any jewelry with an FU symbol on it?
No, that's incredibly tacky, as a matter of fact.
Wow, listen to Chris call something tacky. I don't think I've ever heard that word from Chris before. I like it, though. FU symbol. I feel like that ruins the entire championship ring. I don't know if tacky is the word I would have used, but yeah, I kind of feel like it ruins the ring.
When he's 75 years old, grandchildren on his lap, talking about his title in Toronto, he's not going to want to pull that ring out.
Is that like having a tattoo of your ex on your rear end or something? And then when you're
exactly
75, yeah. This is coming from someone who has no tattoos. Dave, do you think you'd need the FU symbol to remind you to wear your ring on your middle finger?
No, I'm good. I think Chris said it all. I can't add anything else.
I don't understand, though. Like, is it FU to the rest of the NBA? Is it an FU to the... I just feel weird saying
maybe
that phrase over and over. I was just going to say, is it an FU to the Spurs? But they don't have the ring. He does. It's not like they're seeing the symbol. He's seeing the symbol.
Well, he knew someone was going to ask, and now we all know.
Oh my gosh!
You know, everyone, look at me.
Yeah, it's certainly not my taste. I never have used the FU emoji in my life. There is one, and when people send it to me on Twitter, guess what happens? See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. No, I agree with that. The FU emoji is very tacky. Tacky, such a good word. Such not a millennial word, but it was perfect usage there. All right, 855-212-4227. Congratulations to Kawhi Leonard and his FU ring as he is back in Toronto and certainly got the proper welcome.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Play fake, Tannehill looking, throwing deep down the middle, going for Brown. Brown's got it at the 50, breaks the tackle to the 40, to the 30, to the 20, to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone. Ladies and gentlemen, that is 91 yards. Touchdown, Titans! Their longest touchdown pass in over 5 years.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Mike Keith on the Titans Radio Network, and you may remember if you were listening to our show last night or you took a listen to our podcast, we talked Titans football with Rhett Bryan, who is part of the Titans Radio Network, because they are one of the hottest teams in the game right now in a huge matchup against the Texans. Both teams 8-5, top of the AFC South. That's coming up in Nashville this weekend. And right on cue, what do we get for Ryan Tannehill, who took over as the quarterback for the Titans a little over a month ago? He was the offensive player of the week in the AFC. A really impressive performance. I don't care if it was the Raiders. It's still actual NFL football. Tannehill, 21 of 27, 391 yards, 3 touchdowns. He did have a pick in there, but he and A.J. Brown have some kind of connection, and right now the Titans are on a tear offensively.
Well, it's definitely an honor. You know, it doesn't happen a whole lot, so definitely an honor, but I think it's a reflection on our whole group, you know, how we played as a whole. Like I said after the game, you know, guys around me played extremely well. Off the line was doing a great job keeping me clean. And guys making plays downfield. You know, I think, you know, like I said, Derek's been running hard all year, opens up a lot of things for us, and guys making plays outside.
They are putting up points at a pretty incredible rate. Now, he took over, Tannehill, took over in the game against the Carolina Panthers about 5 weeks ago. And let's see, I'm going to see the, 5 weeks ago, and they lost that game. The last 4 weeks though, their last four games, 35 points against the Chiefs, 42 points against the Jaguars, 31 points on the road against Indianapolis, 42 points against the Raiders. So they've scored at least 31 points in each of their last four games. Can they do that hosting the Houston Texans? And obviously, you think about the implications of this game, whether it's for the AFC South title, whether it's for a wild card, trying to keep pace there in case, you know, we end up with two teams from the South Division. This is massive, and this is the opportunity for the Titans to host the first of these two games at home.
You want it to be a great home atmosphere, but at the end of the day, it's about how we play on the field and the execution that we play with, the energy that we play with. Obviously love a home field advantage, but at the same time, it's really about how we come out as a team and are ready to go.
So Ryan Tannehill and the Titans against Deshaun Watson, the Houston Texans, one of the big games, the marquee games of week 15. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, 855-212-4227. That is a game that will be featured on the NFL on CBS. So you'll get that showdown between the Texans and the Titans. Though others of you will see Kansas City hosting Denver in the West, plus other regional action. It all begins with JB and the guys setting up the day on the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, only on CBS. As for the Chiefs, they've got this game against the Broncos at Arrowhead Stadium, and there was a whole lot of trepidation while the Chiefs were waiting to find out about Pat Mahomes and his hand injury.
It's doing better. I mean, a lot of the swellings went out in these last 2 days, and so I was able to throw the football around today, and I'm excited to go out and practice and be able to spin it around there. But definitely it was a little scary after the game when it was a little bit the bruised and the swelling and stuff like that. But as we've kind of done more and more treatment, the swellings went away, so I was able to throw the football and everything.
So I've seen a lot of you tweet me and say, or post on our Facebook page and say that the Chiefs-Raiders is a real good rivalry. When I was cutting my teeth on football and first falling in love with the sport, for me it was Broncos-Raiders. And so the AFC West has got some history there as well. Now it's been Chiefs for the last few years. The Chargers gave him a run for their money last year. But the Chiefs have been the class of that division now for 4 or 5 years. It's now about the familiarity, the no love lost. It's about a little bit of pride inside the AFC West, but also for the Denver Broncos. Now they have Drew Lock, potentially the quarterback of the future. And they also have that defense that makes life difficult on any opponent. And Arrowhead Stadium, such a delicious place to play, too. This should be a cool game.
They've always had a really good defense that that's going to cause problems and do stuff that we're going to have to answer. And so for us, it's about going out there and keep building, keep getting better each and every week. And we understand now that with how their quarterback's playing, they're playing energized. And so we're excited for a great opportunity against a great opponent in Arrowhead.
I wish I could in some way sell you that the Ravens-Jets would be an interesting rivalry, but it may not even be an interesting game. Forget interesting rivalry. I don't know. It might be. We'll see. I know that it's the NFL and anything can and does happen from week to week. But the biggest question around the Ravens has been Lamar Jackson, his status, the quad injury. And it was kind of funny when somebody asked him, how did he get hurt?
Throwing the ball, not running it. Yeah. I got hit on the throw, but I'm pretty good though. I'm good. Hurst touchdown, yep, on the Hayden, the 61 yarder. He was flying too, and I was just celebrating, but I was like, you know, I'm kind of sore, but I'm good.
That's what you get for throwing the football and not running it. Yeah, remember they started out the second half against the Bills with that long touchdown pass to Hayden Hurst. He got hit on that pass, so that was kind of it was a cool piece of the highlight. He lofts the ball up and over the defense to Hurst, and all the while he's about to get flattened. So I love his sense of humor. He's always making jokes about how I'm a quarterback, not a running back, or pretty good for a running back, la la. I tell you what, as I was looking at the rushing stats for this week's column and comparing them to a year ago, but also comparing the passing stats from a year ago to where we are right now in the NFL, it was kind of funny. I had to be careful how I termed it, right? Because we already have the same number of backs over 1,000 yards rushing this season as we did all of last season. And there are probably three more based on their averages who are going to join that party. There's definitely been a concerted effort to rush the ball more. Well, in the case of Lamar Jackson, he's the second quarterback ever to rush for over 1,000 yards in a single season. I couldn't write running backs. I had to be careful that I just left it open and talked about backs or talked about rushers, because he is the exception to the rule, to be sure. So Jets Ravens is how we start off week 15. That comes up later on tonight. Looking forward to that. It's about 15 hours away. In case you're one of those people that's super excited about the Jets and the Ravens, I am excited that we're starting another weekend in football. What's the best rivalry in the sport of football? I think Army-Navy is tops. It's a different category, but a lot of you are giving me some great answers. A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good morning to you.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Great two again. Swing and a miss. Got him on the slider. Took him 10 pitches, but he gets his man. 15 strikeouts for Cole. That's a new Astros postseason record.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I just wrote and recorded a CBS Sports Minute responding to what I'm hearing from a lot of fans. Cole's not worth it. He's not worth that money. No one is worth that kind of money. So you should be listening for that CBS Sports Minute that comes up in a few hours here on our network. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. What's the best rivalry in football in light of Army-Navy 120 years strong? Whether it's NFL or college football, fine. Maybe it's the CFL that produces your favorite rivalry. What is the best rivalry, your favorite one, on the gridiron? Let's talk to Jack, though, who's in California. Welcome to After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
Hello there. I have to say, as far as the football rivalries, I agree highly for the college that it would be Army-Navy, beyond a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you've been alive long enough, Amy, to know that when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, everything...
Nope, definitely not.
...football games on in the... Well, in the 60s, anyway.
Uh-uh.
There were three games on Thanksgiving every year. The first game was Detroit against Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
That was every Thanksgiving. After that, it was the Cowboys and the Washington Redskins. Bears, Lions, good natural rivalry from nature. And it was the Cowboys versus the Indians. How could you beat that? And they were usually the two best teams in their division. And then it was the Army-Navy game. It was always on Thanksgiving.
Ah.
It's been changed, but it used to always be on Thanksgiving.
Interesting. I'm kind of glad they have their own stage now, though. And I like the fact that it's the last regular season game of the college football slate where everybody else is done. Conference championships are done. But that sounds really amazing. I do remember the Iron Bowl being the day after Thanksgiving, and now that one's been moved, too. So a lot of times these things get moved for commercial or broadcast purposes. But that's really cool. I think that would be awesome to watch on Thanksgiving.
I think what happened is that, according to my memory, which is a little sketchy, but it's usually quite sharp, I think it was the last game of the college football schedule in those days, but the schedule ended a little earlier. So I think it was the last game.
Interesting.
But I could be wrong on that score, but I think it was the last one. And it's just times have changed and the schedules. They used to only have 10 games in a college football season, and they used to have fewer NFL games.
Sure, of course.
So I think that was the last game in those days. It's a long time ago, but I certainly did enjoy those Thanksgiving games, and I've been a big Cowboy fan and a big Navy fan. My dad served in the Navy.
Aw, that's awesome.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Your show day after day, night after night, I should say. It's only 2:30, 2:40 here on the West Coast.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, Jack, we're glad to keep company. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Thanks a lot. You too. Have a good holiday.
All right. 855-212-4227. Jerry's in Green Bay. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy. How are you doing today?
Fantastic.
I think the reason that he put the markings inside of his ring is implicating that he's going to have multiple rings. He's going to need to know which fingers to put them on.
All right. Thanks, Jerry. That could be the case. I guess he'd have to have them resized, one for your middle finger. Oh, this one goes on the middle finger. I still think it might be just as easy to slide it on your finger, and if it falls off, then you know it wasn't supposed to go on that finger. again, 855-212-4227. Let's see, some of your... guess what? The guy who originally posted on our Facebook page that the NFL's best robbery is Falcons Saints went back and changed it. Peer pressure. He couldn't stand the peer pressure. Lots of you are saying Ravens Steelers. I would agree with that, though. I got to tell you, when I was a kid and my grandparents lived in Youngstown, which is halfway between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, I just remember that half the yards and driveways in their neighborhood were decorated in black and gold. The other half were decorated in orange and brown. And they all looked forward to Browns Steelers as the rivalry. Now, that would have been before this new Brown, well, new, it's not new anymore. It's two decades old now, but before the old Browns franchise moved to Baltimore and they got their new franchise after a couple of years. So that would have been way back. And it's been tough sledding for the past 20 years, no doubt. But that was the rivalry that everyone in my grandparents' neighborhood always looked forward to, was Steelers and Browns. Jake on Facebook says Michigan State versus Ohio State. Huh? Over Michigan, Ohio State? Maybe he just accidentally put the extra state in there. And now that I mentioned it, he's going to go back and he's going to change it as well. let's see. I've read a lot of the ones on our Facebook page, but I do think it's interesting that some of you are now saying Baltimore, New England in the NFL. Now, they've got some chapters in their history that I think have been really interesting, good stuff, good, very compelling, good games. But I don't know that I would call it a rivalry. rivalries can take a different flavor. They can be about the history and tradition. They can be about the hatred, sports hatred. They can be about the familiarity and the fact that you play often, whether it's every year. In the case of the NFL, it's twice a year in your division. In the case of Major League Baseball, you play teams in your division 19 times during the year, though we are talking about football specifically. But there can be a couple of different ways these rivalries are built and founded. And I don't know there's one particular way to describe it, but I feel like Baltimore and New England, that's kind of hit or miss. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. And while I don't actually know who the Patriots' chief rival is, that's an interesting question. As a girl who grew up in New England, I actually don't know who the Patriots' chief rival would be. I guess my inclination would be to say the Jets, but that one's kind of bleh. Colts, there was a good chapter there. Steelers, maybe? Except that's like saying, you're my best friend, but you have a different best friend. You know what I'm saying? Like, I call this person my BFF, and then they turn around and call someone else their BFF. That happened a lot in high school. This is my best friend, but that person calls someone else their best friend. And so I feel like it should be a rule. You can't be a rival if the other team doesn't see you as their chief rival. So for instance, some of you are posting on my Facebook page that Georgia-Auburn is one of the oldest rivalries and oldest matchups in the South. But it can't be, first of all, it's not Auburn's number one rival because that's Alabama. That's the Iron Bowl. That one goes back for years. Plus it's geography. It's everything. It's intermarriages. It's all that kind of stuff. How can Auburn-Georgia be a rivalry when Auburn-Alabama is a rivalry? That's what I'm saying. Like Georgia, it's got its own rivalry. Would you say, I mean, Clemson-South Carolina is a good rivalry, even if it's not always balanced. Interstate stuff in college that's always worthy. Dale is listening in Alabama. Dale, welcome to After Hours.
Thank you. When I was growing up in the 70s and the early 80s, it was the Oakland Raiders against most the NFL. They all had a right. They didn't. We were the misfits, and they didn't like us at all anywhere.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Not only that, but Al Davis had his own way of doing things, and at times it was kind of like the color of the Raiders. It could be dark and a little shady.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, thank you. I enjoy listening to you.
Thanks, Dale. Good to talk to you in Alabama. Good morning to you. Tim on Twitter says Gophers versus Badgers, so Minnesota versus Wisconsin for Paul Bunyan's axe. Longest running college football rivalry. Rob says the biggest rivalry in football is the game, Ohio State versus the team up north. let's see. Some of you are sending me your high school rivalries, which I won't read, but I do think you can have really great high school rivalries as well. If someone wants to tell me who the Patriots' chief rivalry is, I'd be really interested in that. And also, if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, who is your chief rival? Because you could say Eagles. You could say Redskins. I don't think the Giants are part of that right now. I could be wrong. Hey, you New York people on the other side of the double pane glass, really quick because I want to take this phone call. Who is the Jets' top rival?
The Miami Dolphins.
Huh. Who's the Giants' top rival, Chris?
The Eagles, for sure.
Okay.
Agreed.
All right. So then Dallas is kind of left for the pickings, maybe the Redskins.
It's also the Eagles, I think.
That's what I'm talking about. If you can't have a best friend who has another best friend. let's see. Gerardo on Twitter says, if you were a rabid San Diego Charger fan through the 90s and the 1000s, it was the Chargers-Raiders rivalry to the point where the fans would fight in the stands. I remember a person getting stabbed in the stands. Yeah, that's when it goes too far, to be sure. Let's see, another tweet, Notre Dame versus Miami. David says LSU versus Alabama. That's more recent. I mean, Alabama's number one rivalry will always be Auburn, but Freddie on Twitter, it's the Falcons and Saints, hands down. It's good stuff here. Troy on Twitter says Green Bay, Chicago, which we've heard, but also West Virginia, Pitt. Ooh. That one's the backyard brawl, isn't it? West Virginia and Pittsburgh. Gerald is listening in South Carolina. Gerald, I can give you about 90 seconds. Go ahead.
South Carolina and Ohio State.
Why?
Because remember, at one time, Ohio State and South Carolina played with Steve Sperry all the time, and they could never beat us. But okay, then all of a sudden, they got good.
All right.
See what I'm saying? Auburn, I know what you said, Auburn and Georgia. That was an old rival from back in the day, like the Blue Bonnet Bowl. That's why people think they still are a rival.
Oh, okay.
Old heads. Hmm. Yeah.
So which, who saying, would you?
Another thing.
Okay. Yes.
All right, say it again now.
No, you go ahead. I got to let you go soon.
Yeah. South Carolina and Clemson.
Yeah,
I never thought that was a rivalry.
Okay, but still in-state, and it's got a lot of fervor to it, which I like. But if you're saying that's not their chief rival, I will take your word for it. Thank you so much for your phone call. I'm sorry I have to let you go. We're at the top of the hour nearly here. Randy says on Twitter, Tennessee, Florida. Florida seems to have it's another one of those teams that has a lot of rivals. So Florida, Florida State, Florida, Miami, Florida, Georgia. This guy's saying Florida, Tennessee. That's what happens when you're a team that's consistently good. I know Florida's not been there for a couple of years, but this is what I was saying with the Patriots. And I'm still waiting for someone to tell me who the Patriots' chief rival is. Because I don't actually know.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
The voice god says Kansas City Chiefs. It moves. The Patriots center moves. Let's see. Amon on Twitter says Niners Seahawks. That's a good one. I like that one. And I like that we've got some renewed intensity to that rivalry as well. It was really good going back to the days of Jim Harbaugh and their three straight NFC championships and, man, their games. Remember, that was when Richard Sherman was with the Seahawks, not with the Niners. So kind of interesting there. But it's not got nearly as much tradition as some of these others, but it's a good one, and I'm glad it's coming back. And then Jonathan on Twitter, OU Texas, that's one I've been to in person, which I love. Alonzo in Miami says Miami and Florida State. Yeah, some of these rivalries have gone through various stages of metamorphoses, and so they change and they grow. But if they remain a rivalry, well, then you know it's stood the test of time. All right, you can always find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and on our Facebook page as well if you want to weigh in. Got some good stuff to say for you tomorrow that has absolutely nothing to do with football, but we will be talking about football in Week 15 following Thursday Night Football. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.